This is our last daily practice class in this session, and we'll be continuing in October. We're going to be traveling around the world doing different stuff, mostly Mongolia and Ireland, which you're welcome to come to. Talk to Aura. Where is she? And Northern California. And what I'd like to cover tonight is two things. First is I'd like to actually do a short meditation with you the way you would do it on any given morning, okay? Like we've been talking about all the steps. So I'd like to actually do one together. And if you're new and you don't yet have a daily meditation, you could just make yourself a note each time we get to a new part of the visualization, okay? So we're going to do that first. Then we'll take a break. And then after that, I want to teach you how to do a book, which is how to keep your self-monitoring apparatus going all day long, okay? So these two things, I think, are the core of a successful daily practice, and we'll be doing that tonight, okay? So first, get yourself comfortable for meditation. You can do it in a seat, it's fine. If you're new and you don't have a daily practice, take notes about each step. There'll be about 10 warm-up steps. And then we'll do the actual meditation. And we won't do a very long one. It'll be, mainly I want you to get the warm-up right. Doing a good meditation is like running a race or doing dance or yoga, and you have to warm up before, okay? So I'm going to teach you the short warm-up, and then I'm going to teach you, you know, if I was on a desert island and I could only have one meditation with me, it would be Tonglen. So we'll do a short Tonglen meditation, okay? So get ready to meditate, back straight. Of course, you've already swept your room, blown your nose, done your altar, done your prostrations, made your seat properly, you know all that stuff now, okay? So, shoulders equal, head up, left hand down first, right hand down on top of it, okay? When you're meditating at home, right foot on top of your left thigh, okay? Eyes open or closed as you wish, but if they're open, aim them downwards and don't focus on anything. Okay? And then we begin by watching your breath. Okay, so very first step after you take your position is to watch your breath. Try to count 10 breaths out and then in as one breath. Okay, so the out breath is the first half, the in breath is the second half. Try to count 10 breaths without thinking about anything else. If you think about anything else big time, go back to one and start over again. If you're really honest, you might not get past 3, but let's try. Some people go to 16 before they realize they didn't stop at 10. Okay, so here we go. First count your breath. Out and then in is one breath. Don't force it. Don't try to do anything with it. Should go through your nose. And the first preliminary is you take refuge. And to do that, you can think about the qualities of a Buddha. Buddha, enlightened being, can see the future. They can read the minds of all the people in the world at the same time. They know what's best for people. And they're able to send out clones of themselves all over the world to help people. So, you know, two of the people on the subway today could have been Buddhas. And they have that ability. So we say you can take refuge in those beings and believe that they're around you, and also take refuge in the fact that in the future you will be that being. What I like about refuge is you can take refuge, or you can imagine how it's going to be in the future when you have this ability. And that's the first step. The second step, second warm-up, is to think about bodhicitta, or ultimate compassion. The most compassionate thing you can do in the world is to become an enlightened being yourself, so you can help other people. So imagine, think about committing yourself to doing what you have to do to become an enlightened being and help other people. The third step is to invite an enlightened being to sit and meditate with you. So you imagine whoever it is, it could be Buddha, it could be Dalai Lama, it could be woman Buddha like Tara, it could be Jesus if you feel more comfortable. But ask an enlightened being to come and sit in front of you and meditate with you. Next step is to, it's called bowing down, but you do it in your mind. Think of one of the great qualities of an enlightened being, like the ability to show up anywhere someone needs you, or the ability to read each person's mind, or the capacity of ultimate love. And think about that quality and admire it, and that's a mental prostration. Just admire. If you want to, just think of any normal person you know. Like, I met this rancher in Arizona. He's not a Buddhist, but extraordinary honesty, extraordinary personal character. And just think about those people and rejoice that they exist and admire them. That's a mental prostration. Next step is to offer this holy being a gift, and you can either think about what you put on your altar, like flowers or fruit, or you can think about an imaginary offering, like filling the sky with flowers, or the beauty of the ocean, or the sunset, something beautiful. Picture it in your mind and offer it to them. The highest offering is something about your own practice, like some little effort you made not to get angry today, some little effort you made to study emptiness, something like that, something you're going to do this evening to advance your own practice, and think about it and offer them that. Any beautiful thing you can imagine. Next step in the warm-up is to think about some bad karma you did, something you said to somebody, something you did to somebody, some lousy thought you've had recently, and play back the tape, watch it carefully, remember where you were, who you said it to, what the reaction was, and feel sad about it, feel sad about the bad karma you made. Feel sad about what's going to come back to you. And pick the one, especially in the last 24 hours, that you can remember the most, and play the tape back. Next, do the opposite. In Buddhism, it's very important to do the opposite, which means now go back to the last 24 hours and find the most beautiful thing you've done, the best thing you said to someone, the most honest thought you had, some kind thing you did for someone. Go through the last 24 hours and find all the sweet things you've been doing and be happy. And understand that these are going to build stronger and stronger and make you a Buddha, and be glad. A lot of Americans think that it's wrong to think about your good thing, it's only right to think about your bad qualities. It's not true. Think about all the good things you're doing, all the right things you're doing. The next warm-up is to request teachings. And this can be a request for formal spiritual teachings from a formal teacher, or it can be a request for those informal teachings that you get from the people at work that you don't like, or from members of your own family, or the inspiration you get from certain good people around you, and ask for those kinds of teachings. It's appropriate tonight to ask that we get teachings. Mentally send a message to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, please pay us the honor of coming to our city and teaching us later this week. We send that message mentally. The last part of the warm-up is to think about the great teachers in the world. Think about the great people around you, Buddhist or not, who are inspiring in a spiritual way. And think about even your fellow students, the ones who help you in your spiritual journey, the ones who support you, the ones who give you inspiration. And think of all of those people. Think of two or three specific ones and pray for their long life and pray that they stay close to you. One good Dharma friend who stays close to you often is worth a lot of teachings. And pray that those people stay close. That concludes the preliminaries. When you're actually meditating at home, this is a good place to shift around or scratch your nose or adjust your seat, whatever you like, okay? And then when you're ready to start the main meditation, which is right now, go back to your breath. Start counting your breath again, okay, to bring your mind back. 10 breaths. Watching your breath means be aware of the feel of the breath on the inside of your nose as it goes out and comes back. So try to count 10 breaths without losing your thought to something else. Now we'll start basic meditation. This is a very good meditation to do for a couple of months every morning. And then in October we'll start another one. This is called Tonglen. Very basic. Very, very, very important. It's important all the way up to tantric practice. You start by trying to think of one person that you know who's having a serious problem mentally or emotionally or physically. So try to imagine that you are in their room and you're sitting in front of them. They can't see you, and you can see them, and try to picture them sitting there having their emotional problem or their physical problem. And try to get the room details correct and how they look and how they feel. And go to their room now. They can't see you, but you're there. Now imagine that all their problems have turned to like this black poison in their blood veins, like ink, and then draw all of that ink to the center of their heart into a little round black ball of blackness. That blackness, about the size of a marble, represents all of their pain, mental or physical. So picture that now, coming up through their body to their heart, this black ball of pain. Now we're going to take that pain out of them each time you take a breath. So we'll go back to watching your breath. Every time you take an in-breath, draw a little bit of that blackness out of their heart, up their throat, out of their nostrils, in a thin black stream of smoke, and draw it across the room towards your own nose. But draw it into a ball of blackness in front of your nose. Don't let it touch your face. So with your breath acting like a pump, you are slowly drawing this pain out of them. But don't let it touch you yet. Collect it into a ball in front of your nose. Take about 10 breaths and draw it out slowly, like rattlesnake poison or something. Now we're going to destroy that pain by burning it up. And you're going to burn it in a special flame. And that's a flame. Try to picture in your own heart, in your chest, a flame, a red flame about an inch high. And that flame represents your selfishness. And it's in all of us. All normal people have it. It's based on ignorance or belief in self-existence, but it's not the same thing. It's a derivative called watching out for you and ignoring what other people need. and see this flame at your heart. Now when I say go, you're going to breathe in one deep breath. All that black pain from the other person, emotional or physical pain, is going to come into your nose like smoke, down your throat. And then it's going to come down and touch the flame at your heart. And the minute they touch, it's like gasoline and a match. And there's this huge burst of white light. It fills your body. It starts out like a flashbulb, but it stays. And everything is gone. The red flame is gone. The black pain is gone. And just there's this beautiful nectar filling your body, this white light, filling the whole inside of your body. There's no stomach anymore, no large intestines anymore. It's just beautiful white light. And feels like honey in your body. And you've destroyed their pain. And they say, in honor of that black ball and that dirty red light, you should see this wisp of gray smoke just dissipating into thin air. And it represents that everything is gone. All the pain is gone. All your selfishness is gone. You were willing to take their pain into you and destroy it. So when I say go, take that one deep breath, bring in all the black, let it touch the flame. The black and the flame disappear and the whole body fills with white light like honey. Think clearly about what the pain is. Think clearly about your selfishness. Okay, go. And continue breathing now, but watch the white light in your body. Enjoy it. And now focus on that person like you're in their room, you're like their guardian angel, they can't see you. You just took away all their pain and focus on how happy they feel and what a relief they feel. They have no idea where all this help came from, but suddenly they don't have that problem anymore. Miraculously, they don't have their problem anymore. And just enjoy how good it feels to them. Now imagine that the white light in your body, that a ray of white light comes out of your heart and goes out towards them and brings them the opposite of their problem. Let's say they were sick before and you took away their sickness, but now make them 16 again, you know, make their body young again, make them happy, light, buoyant, vital, give them strength that they've lost. So instead of leaving them just a person who's not sick anymore, you do the opposite to them. Now you make them full of youthful energy and beauty. And if it was an emotional problem, like they were upset about a broken up relationship or something, now give them the sweetest relationship imaginable with some fantastic, perfect person with whom they can practice Dharma or something and also have their love together, and just give the person the opposite of what their problem was. And keep sending that white light out to them, giving them this gift from your heart. That concludes that meditation. Now the way you close your meditation properly, which is also important. First of all, we think it's good to bring that holy being into your heart. So you ask them mentally, please come into my heart. And they agree happily. They rise up in the air slowly. They get smaller and smaller. They come down and rest on the top of your head. Right now they're about 2 inches high. And they're facing the same way as you are now. They've rotated around to face the same way. Now you ask them to come down into your heart. You prepare in your heart like a beautiful little chamber about the size of a pea, right in front of your backbone, about a half an inch in front of your backbone, a little pea-like chamber. And from the outside it looks like a pea. When you go inside it looks as big as Yankee Stadium, and it's this huge beautiful flower and this huge beautiful cushion and jewel throne. And then on top of that, that holy being is going to come down and rest in that. So bring them down like an elevator shaft from the top of your head, in front of your backbone. Feel the warmth of them as they come down. And then park them in that little pea. And they're beautiful, happy, radiant, shining, smiling. They're madly in love with you spiritually. And anytime you need help during the day, you can think of that little chamber, that little secret chamber, and go inside there and be with them and ask them for strength. And they stay there. So imagine them there in your heart. The last thing you do before you stop the meditation is a dedication. Think about all the good karma you did. Meditating is very, very, very heavy good karma. If you keep it up for months every day, that half hour in the morning has a profound effect on your whole day. You are a much different person for the whole day after you've been meditating just a half hour in the morning. And then slowly it makes you into like some extraordinary person. The it doesn't seem like meditation, like it doesn't seem like a half hour or 45 minutes like that every morning should change you so profoundly, but it does. So take that good karma and mentally give it away to people who need it. And that's the best way to invest that good karma. Mentally give it to people who need it, need spiritual help. That's the end of the formal meditation. Personally, at the end, I always add something, which is sort of my spiritual game plan for the day. Okay? And I found it a very useful time. So I try to think of, like, what's the most important challenge I'm going to have today, or what's the worst habit I have, and I'm going to work on it today. I spend a few seconds and try to plan what I have to work on in my own life before I get up. Because after you get up, the world starts again and you're too busy, okay? So I personally, you know, maybe the worst emotion I had the day before, I make some plan for dealing with it today better than I did yesterday before I get up from my meditation seat. I think that's really an important part of your daily meditation. Okay? You have some, go into the busy day with some kind of plan. You know, it doesn't have to be very complicated. Personally, I just think of the one emotion like jealousy or irritation that I'm having trouble with. I think of the person I'm having the most trouble with, and I just make a little plan for dealing with it today before I get up. Okay. Are there any technical questions about that particular meditation? This you'll try to be doing every day, okay? If you don't have a daily practice, this is the cornerstone of your daily practice. Yeah, Mercedes?
The week before you mentioned not to go on to actually rest without having thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Mercedes is talking about the 10 breaths that you're not supposed to go on until you can get 10 breaths without being distracted. That's almost impossible, okay? Which you'll soon find if you're honest with yourself. So the idea is try for about, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes, and then just go on, okay? Because otherwise you'll spend the whole meditation period trying to get to 10. There's a clarification of that practice, which is if you have like a sudden other thought and you get back before you lose count of the breaths, you can go on, okay? If someone slams a door, come on, almost no meditator can not get disturbed by that. I don't count it. As long as I get back before the next count, I don't count it personally, because that's the act of God, right? Can't control those. All right, so you know, you can't, in New York, you can't control the traffic noises and stuff like that. So the mind goes out if you bring it right back. I don't count it. Okay, with every one of these preliminaries, personally, I give it 10 slow breaths or something like that. Now, I'm used to what 10 slow breaths feels like, and then move on to the next preliminary visualization. Don't get hung up on, you're trying to think of the worst thing you did yesterday, and then you get mad again at this person, and then you start thinking about them again, and you know, you don't want that. Move on. It has to keep up a steady pace going through each preliminary, because if you get stuck, you'll be too tired by the time you get to the main meditation. Your knees will hurt, or it'll be time to go to work. I mean, don't get hung up on one of the preliminaries. Keep them moving. If it doesn't come clearly, skip it. You know, if it doesn't come clearly after 3 or 4 minutes, if you can't think of your, you know, your worst deed yesterday, and you've spent 3 or 4 minutes on it, move on. Okay? Other question? Did you have a question? Yeah.
Oh,
it's great to do it with the tape in the beginning, okay? And if you don't have it on tape, ask the Moors. I'm sure they have a, they have something on tape, right? We've done it many, many times, and it's great to follow on a tape. There's a couple of tapes where you go through it a couple times with the tape, and then I get to a place where I say, now you guess the next preliminary. And I give you like 10 seconds to guess, and then I tell you what it is. And that's a good bridge into doing it yourself. Okay? By the way, these preliminaries have been done for 2,500 years. Okay? Exactly like that. For 2,500 years, people have been using this particular method to get into meditation. I was reading recently the Golden Light Sutra, which I'm teaching in Mongolia in September. It's there. You know, that's the way they did it in the time of the Buddha. So it's a great, learn it. Okay, yeah.
Sometimes when my concentration is not good, there's this tricky little part of my mind that interferes with the meditation. And instead of being able to draw all the negativity out of the person, it keeps putting something in. What do I
do? Debbie Bice says, there's a, what do they call it? Anyway, tricky part of her head. Sometime during the process of sucking out the other person's black misery, she catches herself injecting some.
It reappears
in there.
Like I can't get it out.
Oh, she keeps sucking it out and then it keeps coming back into them, okay? I don't know, it never happened to me. I would say, do it again. No, suck it out again. Okay. I think that's auspicious to keep trying. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. If you'd like to imagine a generic suffering being, you know, like all the cows that are going to get slaughtered today in the United States, which is exactly 60 times 60 times per year or per day? Yeah, it's about 800,000 per day. Okay. In the United States. So just imagine them and imagine any one of them. You see what I mean? And just, yeah, take the pain. Ask the Moors. They are the tape masters. Okay. Yeah. All the scriptures that teach Tonglen say that if you feel some discomfort or you feel sort of apprehensive about taking, like if it's a cancer patient or something and you feel some sort of apprehension, they say it's an excellent sign. They say you're doing it really well. And they say if you feel some sort of hesitation or apprehension, it's not a bad sign, it's a sign that you are concentrating well, and overcome it. You know, you have to, if it feels very uncomfortable, start with some lesser problem. Okay, they say go like that, go at your own capacity. So if like a cancer is too much for you, work on someone's fear of dentist drills or something, you know what I mean? And then build up to something else, but go down to a level of pain that you don't feel apprehensive about. Yeah, if it starts to feel, some kind of anxiety or apprehension, stop where you are, destroy as much as you've breathed in. By the way, it's very important to destroy it. There are people who teach Tonglen as taking in the black and then just staying there. And none of the texts say that. None of the presentations say that. You have to destroy it. It's not like you're taking their pain and storing it in you or something like that. You're taking their pain into you, but then you're destroying it. And it's very important not to leave it there. You have to destroy it, every last bit of it, okay? That's the real tradition. So you don't have to worry that there's any permanent effects on you, except for compassion. Yeah. Yeah, you can send it into their heart, it's fine. Yeah. It also depends on what you're sending. Technically speaking, you take the pinpoint at the end of the light ray, you blow it up to about a mile wide, and you imagine all the things they could ever want there, and then you hit them with it. You see, it's very cool. So meditation is like Jimi Hendrix's song, standing next to a mountain, chop it down with the edge of my hand, you know? And when you're in meditation, they say, get used to blowing yourself up to about a million miles tall, and then shrink to the size of a flea. You see what I mean? Go into the pinpoint of the tip of the ray of light as it's facing you. Blow it up to the size of this room. Load it with a couple of Ferraris, a couple of nice girls, you know, some chocolate candy that they're not supposed to have, you know, a Dharma teacher, emptiness direct realization, and then send it to them, you know. And they say, and then blow it back down to a pinpoint and send it to them, you see what I mean? And they say get used in meditation to, you know, when you go into that pea, it's the size of a beautiful, huge room. And then when you leave the pea, it's back to a pea size. And get used to doing that, and then your meditation gets, A, it's more fun, B, it keeps you from getting sleepy, and then C, it makes your mind stronger. Your concentration, your samadhi gets more sophisticated. And they actually teach you to do that in the monastery all the time. Change, how do you say, exponentially your size. Okay, we'll take a break there. And then come back in about 10 minutes. I'll do a real short presentation on the book. Again? Ready? Everybody? Okay, we'll start again. Very quickly, I want to show you how to do the book, okay? Some people want to call it a confession book. I don't like that. That's the old days, okay? Some people want to call it a purification book. That's okay. Some people want to call it a getting to paradise book. I like that a lot. I always did like positive reinforcement better. Some people want to call it a six times a day book, which I think is maybe best of all, because then you don't forget the main quality of this book, which is six times a day, okay? So I want to show you how to do this book very quickly. Several people took vows this afternoon. This is especially for you. Some people took some vows yesterday, okay? But you open it up like that in the morning, and in the morning, one of the first things I do, after I brush my teeth, blow my nose, I get some tea or some juice, I sit down and I load my book for the day, okay? It's a very nice habit. Take the book like that, open it up like that, take the left side, draw a line down the middle, and then two lines across, and that makes six boxes, okay? Six times a day, you're going to stop, open up this dumb little book, and write down how you're doing, okay? I worked in the diamond cutting factory at night, just when I was doing the diamond business. This is extracurricular activity that I used to do so I would learn more about the business, because we were dealing in diamonds that were already cut, but I wanted to know how they were cut. So I went to this secret factory, 20 floors up, 47th Street. They work all night cutting diamonds, and a lot of them were Hasidic guys. I'd say, why do you work till 2 in the morning on these diamonds, you know? Don't you have a wife and family? And they'd say, that's what the problem is. Okay. And they like to stay there and talk with each other and goof, you know, slowly cut diamonds and drink coffee. But it was very beautiful because every few hours, no matter what time it was, they would stop working, take the diamond off the cutting wheel, go stand in the corner with their back to the factory, and they would do their prayers, you know. And in the Diamond Dealers Club in New York, which is this extremely exclusive, it's $8,000 to apply for membership in 1980, I don't know what it is now, there's a special prayer room for stopping during the day, and you go in there and you do your prayers like six times a day. It's a beautiful thing. And that's what we're supposed to do too. So six times a day you stop. You stop and you do your book, okay? So this is, by the way to get to heaven, okay? This is the way that Buddhism works. If you keep going to classes for years, nothing big will happen to you, okay? You need to meditate every day, and you must check your heart six times a day, or it just doesn't work, okay? And nothing happens. And you've met maybe lots of Americans who are professional Dharma students who, we can't judge other people, but it would seem that they haven't progressed at all since the beginning, years back. So I think you must examine your heart six times a day. It must be part of your Buddhism. It is probably the most important part of your Buddhism, okay? So six times a day, you check your vows. How many vows do you have, okay? Every Buddhist is trying to keep the 10. I'll give them to you right now. If you don't have any others, just watch these 10. Number one, I like to state these in a positive way. Did you protect life today? Okay? Did you protect life? Okay. In some form, did you move a pencil off the stairway that somebody might have slipped on? You see what I mean? You're not going to get a chance every day to throw someone out of the way of a speeding taxi or something. Okay? Or invent the Salk vaccine. But, you know, did you think of doing something? You know, did you give an aspirin to somebody at work? Did you make a tea for somebody who had a sniffle? Protecting life. You know, the karmic result of checking this one every day is that your own body will get light, strong, healthy, unbelievable, okay? Just little things, okay? The book is made for little things. The book is made for moving a pencil off the stairway where you live, okay? So that's protecting life. Second one is honoring other people's property, okay? Did you make noise at Leon's today going up the stairs, you know? Did you take the last toilet paper from the bathroom and not make sure that the next guy had some? You know, stuff like that. Honoring other people's things. Small. Heaven is built on small things. You'll find out that you don't have to be Mother Teresa. It's the state of mind. And the state of mind has to be concerned about detail. It's the small things that make you a perfect spiritual person. Did you arrange toilet paper for the next person? Okay? Seriously. Third one is sexual purity. Sexual purity. Are you faithful in your relationships with other people? Okay? If you're engaging in sex, are you doing it at a nice, normal, healthy level and not getting obsessed about it and thinking about it all day, or things like doing it in improper places, improper times, with improper people? Okay? Healthy, sexual, normal relationship, fine. Adultery, all sorts of weird things, not fine, okay? Does it bother your peace of mind? You see what I mean? That's the question. And maintain the level of sexual purity that you have committed to, okay? That's the third one. So for a married person, it would be, did you, like, check out somebody's wife today? You know, just for a second, you know, did you do that? Okay, something like that, all right? This person's already committed to another person. Are you honoring that relationship by not bothering that person's spouse or something like that? Even in your mind, okay? Yeah? Technically not allowed in Buddhism, okay? People ask me about all these sexual things, okay? There's about 20 different versions, you know? It goes somewhere from adultery to homosexuality, masturbation, not being cool. having sex with a monk or nun, things like that. Not generally allowed. Up to having sex too many times, like 6 times a night or something, okay? So most people I say said, oh, I'd like to be ill, you know? But, okay. And then it goes up to, frankly, heterosexual sex. And then thinking about sex. And then even needing sex. You see, I mean, so it's a whole spectrum. It's not my goal tonight to go into the details of it, but it's like, it's very similar to eating. There's overeating, there's eating bad food, there's eating what you need, there's eating what's good for you. And finally, in Buddhism, there's a stage where you don't need to eat anymore. And sex is about exactly the same. And it's just a progression up a spectrum. Okay? And the goal is to get to a point, you don't need it for the human body. It's a psychological thing that you can supply through much more amazing means, okay? And generally work towards that. That's all. Don't get guilty. Don't feel bad. Don't feel dirty. Don't, you know, right now it's a normal, healthy thing. Do it nicely. Don't let it obsess your life. You know, do it in a nice, beautiful, sensitive way. Don't get close to adultery or hurting other people's relationships. That's the main thing right now. Honor other people's commitments that they've made and don't ever cross that line. You see what I mean? And that's the third one, okay? Number four, trying to be totally truthful all day long, okay? So are you required to tell someone how bad their dress looks who asks you for your opinion? Change the subject, okay? Drop your coffee. Okay. Something like that. But of course, if it would hurt the person's feelings in a terrible way, make them very angry. If it's very destructive, you know, you can just sort of slide out of it. Okay? Number five is device. Do you speak in ways that you try to bring people together? You know? Do you, in your everyday conversations, try to bring other people closer together? Once in a while, you meet a person who's really good at this, Salim Lee. He'll run up to you and say, I got a person for you. I got someone who you gotta meet. This person's amazing. You love this person. Then he introduces you and you're like your best friends forever. You see what I mean? Because our normal human tendency is, did you hear what she said about you? Oh, you don't wanna know. You know, you know what I mean? So it's doing the opposite. It's concentrating on doing the opposite. Okay, bringing people together with your words. Number six, I think, is speak gently to other people. Gentle speech. Okay, when you speak to other people, considerate, thoughtful, gentle. Okay, nothing. No curse words unless they're your best friend. We had names for our roommates in college that I can't tell you. And they were meant in a nice, beautiful way. And then there's ways of talking to people with sweet words, which are like, go to hell. But, I mean, they're like, have a nice day, which means get out of the house, you know, or something. It's judged by your intent, is what I'm saying. Okay, speak gently for the context. Is number, what was that? Six. It's number seven is try to speak meaningfully. Okay? Whenever you open your mouth, try to say something that has some kind of relevance to the person's life. Okay? Like, don't sit there and blab about O.J. Simpson or some, you know, stuff that's never going to be resolved, stuff that doesn't matter, stuff that doesn't help anybody. Don't talk about President Clinton's problems or just wasted talk, you know. When you open your mouth, try to say something meaningful. Try to talk about something meaningful, okay? Number eight is when you see someone else get something nice, be happy. Okay? What's the opposite of that? It's like jealousy or unhappy when someone gets something nice. So number eight is like when something good happens to somebody else, you're like, you rush up to, I'm so happy you got that promotion, you know, I can't believe it. You really deserve it, you know, or something like that. Speaking, consciously trying to take joy in other people's successes, okay? Our human tendency is to be jealous, okay? We are bodhisattvas, we are Mahayana Buddhists, We are committed to the goal of bringing every happiness to every sentient being. And I don't see why the hell they got the promotion. You know? Okay. By the way, these are the top 10 out of 84,000. I mean, these 10 are going through your mind every few hours. Okay. There are 84,000 versions of the negative side. Okay. These are the top 10. What they're saying is the opposites go through your mind almost all day long, and they ruin your life. They make you unhappy. Okay. Did you have a question? Quick. Yeah, that's no problem. Happy for them and also want it for yourself is fine, as long as you go about getting it in a nice, healthy Dharma way. Okay. Which is normally giving it away to someone else. Sorry. Okay. By the way, then you get 10 back, guaranteed. So it's no big sweat. All right. Number 9 is the opposite, which is trying to feel for other people who have misfortunes. Like when someone has a misfortune, you take the time and the effort to try to empathize with them and try to go to them and say, you know, I'm sorry that happened to you. The normal human tendency is the opposite. Oh, O.J. Simpson, he murdered somebody? His life is ruined? Tell me more. You know, and you're like, there's this human tendency to be fascinated by other people's problems, especially famous people's problems. John Kennedy died? Ooh, how? Did the fuselage break up or not? You know what I mean? And this is the big thing in the newspaper, you know. How many pieces was he in when he was recovered, you know? People are dying to know. You have to think of the opposite, you know. You hear about something like that, you're like, oh, I'm sorry for his family, and I feel really bad about it, and I wish that wouldn't happen to anyone. And it's the opposite of being fascinated by other people's problems. You truly try to put yourself in their place and try to help them out with their problems, okay? Number 10, excuse me? Yeah, it's really a sense of empathy or compassion, yeah, with other people's problems, rather than this secret little joy, okay? If you live in a corporation, I worked in a corporation for 16 years, the opposite goes on very frequently. Somebody makes a $100,000 error on a shipment, and you're going to not get a raise this year because of it, and you're still fascinated. You're like, tell me, how did they do it, you know? And it's a weird human tendency. You know, you're not like upset by it, you're like fascinated by it. Like, tell me, how did they screw up? How did it get stolen? They wrote the wrong address? Man, you know, and it's going to ruin your raise too, but you don't care. You're just fascinated, you know. Okay, number 10 is maintain a Buddhist worldview. Understand that all good things come from helping other people and all bad things come from watching out for your own interests only, okay? You can watch out for your own interests, but equally watch out for other people's interests. That's healthy, okay? But at the expense of others, you serve yourself is a wrong Buddhist worldview. Every good thing in the world, money, financial security, friends, relationships, food, Michael and Zoe's milkshakes, everything comes from serving other people. That's the Buddhist belief, okay? You cannot breathe one breath of air unless you helped someone in the past to live. The reason you have the honor of breathing for the rest of today, each breath comes because you did something good for someone else. And that's the Buddhist worldview. And you strive to keep it. Okay? Now you got 10, right? Now those of you who have refuge, you've got 22 because you have 12 refuge commitments. Those of you who have bodhisattva vows have 86. Plus a bunch of other ones. Those of you who have tantric vows, you're up to about 190-something. Those of you who are full monks with tantric vows have 484 commitments, okay? You don't check 484 a day, you check 6, and you cycle through them, okay? So if I've given you 10, at 8 o'clock in the morning, you put, did I honor life? Okay? That's, you put the vow. Number one, honoring life. Okay? Protecting life. And then, 8 o'clock in the morning, you check a plus, a minus, and a to-do. So there's a plus sign, a minus sign, and there's a to-do in the first box. The first box is going to be for 8 o'clock. The second box is for about 10:30. The third box is for noon. The fourth box is for three because you got busy. You know that. This box is for five-ish. This box is for seven, okay? And then over here, we're going to do something else before you go to bed, okay? But let's stick over here. So every 2 to 3 hours, you're checking the next vow, the next commitment, okay? So what do you write down for honoring life? You put down a positive, okay? What's the one thing? By the way, we do the positive first. Why? In case you die between lines, you at least die with some good karma on your mind. Okay, if you die before you get to the negative, which one day you will, okay? So you write a positive. This has to be a specific occurrence today or yesterday that really happened that had to do with your success in honoring life, okay? What's a specific example? Got Fabricio a carrot juice. Okay, real example from about an hour ago, or whenever it was, 2 hours ago. Okay, like this guy, I could have ordered him a Coke, but I'm saying, you know, this guy looks healthy, let's keep him healthy, and order him a carrot juice. No more glorious than that. No Mother Teresa stuff, no Mahatma Gandhi stuff. This is what you get enlightened on. I'm not kidding. Real life minor examples that are really happening to you. If you keep up your Buddhist principles at this microcosmic level, you'll be a saint in quick order. Because it's the small things that make saints, okay? You only get a chance to be Joan of Arc once in a lifetime. The rest of the time, did she milk the cows right? You know, okay? Life, enlightenment is built on these minor, specific things that you did. Question?
Yeah, is it doing one vow a day?
No, you're going to be doing 6 vows a day. So you're going to do 1 through 6 on tomorrow. You're going to do 7 through 3, or 7 through 13. Well, let's say you only have 10. You're going to do 7 through 3. 7 through 3. The next day, then 4 through 9 the next day, like that. You're cycling through. You do 6 today of your 10. Tomorrow you start with 7. When you get to 10, you start over again with 1. You see what I mean? You just cycle through the ones that you have. If you have bodhisattva vows, you're doing 6, 1 through 6, then 7 through 12, then 13 through, okay? Until you get to the end of the 64 vows, and then you go back again, okay? Bottom line, you take all the vows that you currently have, add them all up, okay, and just go through them until you get to the end of them, 6 a day. Is that easy? Okay. So you're only checking one different vow every 2.5 hours, okay, and you're rotating through the total number of vows that you have. For me, 484 vows, a rotation takes me about 80 days. It takes me 2.5 months to get back to the first vow. And that's fine, okay. That's the way it's supposed to work. Okay.
So
question?
Yeah. You're at work and all of a sudden 2 hours went by and you hadn't even thought about any vows, and then I could leave at 3 a.m. in the morning to get through 6 vows. These light spots.
Oh, if you're at work and real busy, you can find something, okay? This is the principle of free association. Okay? And you must use it, okay? Like, did I commit adultery in the last 2 hours? Come on, I was too busy. I had a business meeting, and there were no girls there, you know what I mean? And, you know, well then, on the way to work, did you look at some lady that you don't know whether she was married or not? You see what I mean? Free associate. Did you open the National Enquirer and waste your time looking at some girl in an ad or something like that? We call it, in monastic vows, it's called the concentric circle theory. You know, this is committing adultery. This is looking at someone else's wife. This is, or let's say this is touching them, okay? This is looking at them or staying close to them. This is talking to them more than is appropriate. This is looking at them more than is appropriate, you know? This is sitting with them alone on, you know, in a room. You know, this is, and then you go like that. This is looking at sexy advertisements in the magazine or something. Okay? And for a monk, we try never to break the first one. You see what I mean? And then you've got no problem about not breaking the inside one. It's called the concentric circle theory of keeping your vows. Okay? If you never look at an advertisement of a printed lady, you'll never go further than that. You see what I mean? And so free associate backwards until you hit something. Okay? Did I protect life? No. Did I offer any carrot juice in the last 24 hours? No. How about 48 hours? Ah, there was that one thing. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, for each vow. I didn't get to the negative. The negative would be something like, didn't get enough sleep last night. Okay. Anything you do to hurt yourself counts also. Okay? You are one of the sentient beings in the universe. You're supposed to take care of you too. Okay? So, didn't get enough sleep. Ate more ice cream than I even could. Okay. Something that hurt you or hurt somebody else, okay? And then to do is something like very, very specific, minor thing that you can do in the next 24 hours, 48 hours, you know, go to bed on time tonight. Okay? Something like that. All right? Clean the shelf in the bathroom because roaches get in there and get killed when I leave my coffee cup in there. You know what I mean? Seriously. Get down to that kind of morality. According to the concentric circle theory, you know, you'll be keeping everything very purely. If you get it, people don't understand. The way to be a perfect being, the way to reach tantric enlightenment, is to keep this dumb little thing. This is a tantric vow. I'm breaking my tantric vows. I'm telling you one of my tantric vows. I don't mind. This is one of the vows in the highest levels of tantra, okay? Is to do this thing 6 times a day called tundu. Must check 6 times a day, okay? Why is it a tantric vow? Because if you do this thing, you'll get your rear end into a tantric paradise before you die, okay? Why? Because your morality is down to nuts and bolts, real life, specific things that are happening. Don't put here, I'm a bad person. Don't put here, you know, I like chocolates. You know what I mean? It's got to be something specific. I ate one chocolate this afternoon. Okay? And the to-do is, no matter what happens in the next 3 hours, I'm not going to eat a chocolate. Okay? Even if you're going to eat one 4 hours from now, that's fine. No, morality starts small. Okay? Self-control starts small. Okay, 3 hours of self-control. It's a good start. It's enough. It's more than you ever did before. And you'll find that if you keep this up after a while, your self-control gets like incredible after a couple months. You see what I mean? And don't do something unreasonable here. Don't say, we'll never again look at a lady on the street. Okay? Do something reasonable. Okay? Okay? Yeah? If you took the wish yesterday for Bodhisattva vows, if you have any source for the vows, and you want to start checking them now, God bless you. That's wonderful. Okay? You don't have to have Bodhisattva vows to be checking them from time to time. Okay? That's fine. Control them in to the best of your understanding. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Free associate. If you have trouble finding something specific, you know, okay, I didn't threaten anybody's life today, but I yelled at so and so. Now I understand the path of listening. I have trouble with that one. Yeah, free associate like crazy, and then learn more about the vow. Okay, in that vow, there's like a list of 20 specific ideas that the listeners have. You see what I mean? And you just didn't study it deeply enough yet. Okay, like it happens to be that the teaching on the four Arya truths is what they're talking about. Which means if you didn't, for example, if you still think that getting a promotion at work would be the end of the truth of suffering, then you're not respecting the listening path or something like that. You see what I mean? But you just have to learn more about the vow. Yeah. Yeah. No, try to find something specific, recent, okay? If it's not 24 hours, 48 hours, or a week, or something like that, okay? Okay. If you have some old, really bad ones, like an abortion or something, throw that in every once in a while. Okay? Something like that. Now, you do that, is it clear? You do that 6 times a day, every 2.5 hours. It's no good to get to the end of the day and do 5 of them. That belabors the point, okay? It's wrong. There's a corruption of the tantric version where they do it twice a day nowadays and they repeat it 3 times. That's bad. The guy who invented it said, I'm doing this for retarded people only. And it says that at the end of the text, but people skip that part. Seriously, I'm not kidding, okay? Okay, so you got the idea. 6 times, yeah. Oh, every 2 hours, at the top you write the name of the vow, which is honoring life. Then you put positive, a negative, and a to-do. And under the positive you write something you did in the last day or two that in some minor way contributed to someone else's life, health, happiness, okay? And then negative is something you did. Maybe you upset a person with heart disease, or, you know, I mean, something like that. Anytime you upset anybody, you're hurting their health, actually, okay? And then to do, a small game plan. Don't say something crazy like, I'm going to save all the roaches on 6th Street, or so, you know. Don't make it something unrealistic. Make it something you can really do, okay? Yeah. Yeah, no, if you slip, you have to. You have to finish it. You have to finish it, yeah, yeah. But don't slip. People say, look, I worked in a corporation, I had 3 telephones, I had 400 people working for me, you know. I was like this. And I just went to the bathroom. I found out that no one ever challenged me if I went to the bathroom. I could have 12 people standing in line outside my door. I said, I gotta poop, guys. No one ever asked me, stay, you know, and, until I got to my Dharma students. But anyway, just go. And I have lots of friends who are executives. They keep it in their calendar so they don't look Buddhist at work. And I did the same thing. Take it out, go to the stall, close the door, you know, write it out. Really, I've been in huge board meetings and millions of dollars flying around and just got up and said, I gotta go. Yeah.
As far as when you list the vow?
Yeah. I do them in the morning when I have time. I drink a tea before my meditation and I try to enjoy it. And I get it all loaded in the morning. Yeah.
Is it okay to list the 6 for the day at one time? So that
sure. Yeah. Yeah. I actually do that. I think it's better. Okay. Very quickly, because the sergeant is telling me we have to go. The other side of the page, down at the bottom, make a T. By the way, you can start handing out these books now, if anyone. You got your free, first book is free, okay? Okay, go for it. And you just put 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. On the left, 1, 2, 3. On the right, 1, 2, 3. What is this? Let's say that the day after tomorrow, you guys are going to be doing what? 7 through 3. If you only have 10 vows. You won't be doing vow number 1, which is what? Protecting life. Now suppose you happen to have killed your boss that day. And it doesn't come up in the 6 boxes. That means you're going to be 24 hours that you're going to have that karma on your head. Karma exponentially increases every 24 hours. The karma of killing one boss on Wednesday, if you don't write it down, is the karma of killing 2 bosses by Thursday, and 4 bosses by Friday, and 16 bosses by Saturday. I'm not kidding. This is the principle of how karma increases. You got to write it down the same day. So this is reserved at the end of the day, best 3, worst 3. Best 3 on the left, worst 3 on the right. Go over your whole day, just before you go to sleep. Very good to die with a clear conscience. If you die during your sleep, very good to have done your book before you die. Okay? Best 3 on the left, worst 3 on the right. For the whole day, the best 3 and the worst 3.
Okay?
Yeah, whether they relate to what you did or not. Okay? By the way, can one of these be over here? Yes. If you did a really crappy thing that's over here, then add it over here too. Okay? But if you did a really crappy thing that didn't come in your vows today, make sure to put it over here. Okay? Okay?
But you might not have any entries.
Right, right.
Just in case you kill the boss.
Yeah, just in case you killed your boss. And there's no killing vow that day. So you don't get out of it. I saved the middle box for special things. Meditation. How did my meditation go today? That forces you to report on something that you've got to do. Okay? And if it's blank, it means you didn't do it. Okay. Or else it was a totally unexciting meditation. And I make notes. I say, like, figured out that I should push the pillow up a half inch, you know. Did Tonglen on that schmuck at work, you know. Something like that. I force myself to make a note about it, okay? You can put in there special stuff that you're having a problem with, okay? Like if you tend to get angry at a certain person, have an entry in there for a week or two. You know, how am I doing with this person, okay? Now, ordained people, I reserve this box up on the left for my monk's vows, okay? I have a whole separate system going on for my monk's vows because most of American Sangha don't know their vows very well. And I found it very useful to write your vows down specifically and cycle through your monk's or nun's vows every day. And then you get really good at knowing your vows and you can keep them much better. Okay? Any questions about the book? Yeah.
If it's a thin book to start with, when you fill it, you know, like a month or two, yeah. What do you do with the book?
When you fill it, it's a custom in Tibet to throw it into a forest, throw it into a river. Bodies of water are supposed to be holy, you know, like the sea, go to the ocean side, save them up for a couple months, go to beach, throw them in. Don't get caught. Go to the Hudson River, throw it in. It's considered auspicious to offer it like that, okay? You might want to save them for a year or two and go back and see how you're doing. Sometimes you can get a lot of information 6 months later. You know, you go back and say, what was my screwy mind in what... What was I having problems with 6 months ago? And then you notice that it's still having the same problem. You know, and then you're like, no, I mean, I save them personally. I've got probably 50 of them or something, you know. And it's wonderful. You know, it's really wonderful. You really, really change. Just by observing yourself, you change, okay? It's wonderful. And your mind starts to change totally. And then your world starts to change. Last question. I like to date them.
Okay, do you notice like cycles over the years since you get books, like yeah. Things
may
occur on the same day?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I date it, and I also, like full moon, it actually something does happen. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. I've noticed that. And also, a lot of my students mark the time, just so they keep, they make sure. I've got students who are like about to reach nirvana. I've got one specific one I can think of. She recently wrote me, as of next week, I'll have kept my book for 2 years. I have never missed an entry, and I have never been late with an entry. You know what I mean? And this person is like so high, they can barely touch the ground nowadays. And it works, okay? It really works, okay? Last question.
Where can we get the references of the vows, the explanation in
the morality vows, the 10, are explained in the Vinaya course. What was that? Course number 9. Ask the Moors. The Bodhisattva vows are explained exhaustively, like no one has ever explained them, in course number 7. Okay? The tantric vows, you have to ask your tantric teacher to give them to you. Okay? All right, we'll stop there. Very auspicious. No, that's for you. Yeah, it's yours. Okay. All right. She probably didn't want my bad deeds in there. Okay. By the way, very good course. You've got everything you need for your daily practice. Now, what's the last thing you need? To do it. Okay. And I go back to the first thing I said. Pick a time of the day that you're going to do your meditation and stick to it every single day no matter what, okay? And do your book, and you will be happy forever. And you will see temporary paradise in this lifetime. Okay? But you got to do it. I can't do anything more than what I just did. And, you know, the longer you wait, the more delay you'll have. And it's not like this stupid obligation thing or something that Geshe Michael's forcing you to do. Or it's not like that. This is your ticket to paradise. Truly, really, your reality will start to change because your reality is determined by what you do and say during the day. Your reality in 6 months is totally created by what you do now. You can change reality in 6 months from now. You can change the crime rate in New York. You can change your credit cards. Everything. Depending on how you act today. That's what Buddhism says. So do it. You know, don't think of it as an obligation or some stupid thing. Don't fight it. Just do it. Okay? And everything you ever dreamed for will come true. Okay? All right. Here we go. And thank you for coming to this class. This was actually the most fun class of all, especially the question and answers. It was really beautiful. So thank you for that. And see you in October. If you have questions about how to keep your book and stuff like that, talk to some of the people in the Sangha or the older students here. Okay? All right. See you then.